As the country reckons with racial injustice, many people are turning to books that deal with race or anti-racism. And Ralph Ellison's terrific Invisible Man is on many of the recommended reading lists circulating online. It's a book that President Obama has cited as a major influence on his own development. Vermont Public Radio's Anna Van Dyne explains how the novel began in a barn in the Green Mountain State.
Let's go back 75 years to summer 1945. World War II was coming to an end, and a young man serving in the Merchant Marine had fallen ill. His name was Ralph Waldo Ellison. On his medical leave, he decided to visit Vermont.
He was obviously excited to be in that particular state, especially in the summertime, thrilled to have free time, but also laboring all the while to try to find his voice as a novelist.
That's Arnold Rampersad, who wrote a biography of Ellison. He says Ellison was planning to use the time to start a book.
He was not sure that he was a novelist, but he was determined to become a novelist.
Eventually, he did. In 1952, Ralph Ellison published Invisible Man, a book narrated by an unnamed young black man, invisible due to others' refusal to see him for who he is because of the color of his skin. It became the first book by an African-American writer to win the National Book Award. And Ellison started it that summer of 1945. He was staying with friends from Harlem, John and Emily Bates, in their summer house in Fayston, Vermont. There were three little girls in the house, too, Joan, Diana, and Grace.
I'm Grace Ann Bates, and I am the daughter, one of the daughters of John and Emily Bates.
Back then, Grace Bates was just 5 years old. She remembers there was no running water, and just about the only car that drove by belonged to the mailman.
As a child, it was just heaven. It was just nothing but playing in the mud, playing in the brook, picking berries.
While Grace and her sisters played, Ellison sat in the barn, trying to write his novel. And then something happened. Here he is in a 1966 TV interview.
Certain things that I'd been doing, reading, thinking about, came into focus. It's sort of unconscious focus, as often happens when you're writing something.
Ellison says he'd been thinking about mythological heroes and historical figures and what it meant to be an African-American leader at the time. This was before the civil rights movement of the 60s. And one morning, sitting in that barn,
I wrote the first sentence of what later became Invisible Man. I'm an invisible man. And I played with that, started to reject it. But it intrigued me, and I began to put other things with it. And pretty soon, I had a novel going.
Ellison later explained that the book's opening line was delivered to him by, quote, a taunting, disembodied voice. He tried to ignore it, but he couldn't. Something that had happened in Vermont was on his mind, too. He'd seen a poster in a nearby town for a blackface minstrel show. He was surprised. He wrote that he'd, quote, thought such entertainment a thing of the past, but there in a quiet northern village, it was alive and kicking.
It absolutely speaks to the ways in which these minstrel shows and other aspects of racism were popular throughout the entire country, and that the North also had major issues around segregation and racism and was not at all, you know, sort of immune somehow as a liberal space.
Jennifer DeVere Brody directs the Center for Comparative Studies in Race and Ethnicity at Stanford University.
I think that what was surprising for him was to see the ways in which race continues as a trope and slavery as a kind of formative understanding of American race relations.
Ellison's novel takes place in the South and in New York and contains no mention of Vermont. But biographer Arnold Rampersad says it's not surprising Ellison's moment of inspiration happened where it did.
Ellison saw all around him examples of people who did not know history, did not know their own history, did not know their own sacrifice, you know, but were good people, but having lost connection to an earlier time when they were, in some respects, the center of the American moral world, certainly the liberal world. And that was what he was trying to investigate in modern terms in Invisible Man.
Ellison left Vermont with the beginnings of his book, which he published 7 years later. He never returned to that farm in Fayston before his death in 1994. Yawu Miller, the son of Grace Bates, whose parents hosted Ellison, grew up visiting Vermont in the summers.
it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s that I understood the connection between Invisible Man and this place.
And when he did,
it just made the world feel a little bit smaller, you know?
Miller says there are other connections, too.
I drove by a Black Lives Matter protest down there in Waitsfield. It was probably about 7 people. But, I mean, I know that there have been protests all over Vermont. It's just kind of cool to see people recognizing the little bits of history that have happened here and also connecting to a broader movement that's happening across the country.
As for the barn, it fell into a state of disrepair and was torn down years ago. All that remains is a pile of stones, barely visible in a tangle of undergrowth, and Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man that began there 75 years ago. For Here and Now, I'm Anna Van Dyne.